Excellent, excellent. So hopefully some of this will be new for some people. Some of it will be a bit of a revision for other people. And we'll see how we go. Now, these guys are giving me the thumbs up, which means I'm allowed to start. So welcome to Identity Management in the Cloud. Hey, look, the first thing I want to do is thank you all for coming today. There are heaps of really interesting sessions on. I appreciate you coming to mine. So who am I? Well, my name's Daniel Bobiers. I'm an architect at Datacom, and I run the Microsoft Wellington Infrastructure and Cloud User Group. So a bit of a shout out, if you're in Wellington and you like talking about infrastructure and cloud, come along to our user group. So what are we going to talk about today? Well, we're going to go through Azure Active Directory, some of the features and functions and kind of what it is. We're going to talk about how we synchronize our local Active Directory with Azure Active Directory. And to finish off, I'm going to take you through some tips and tricks to make your synchronization experience with Azure Active Directory a bit more seamless. What can we do to our local AD to kind of prepare it for that synchronization? Now look, following this session, I'm really hoping that you'll all go and start your own Azure AD trials. That's kind of my aim. That's my key thing for you to get out of this session. But let's start with a story. Meet Bob. Bob's worked at the same company for the last 25 years. He's a really good worker. I think it's one-dimensional when he's just like that. He's got two beautiful kids and a wonderful wife. Now, when Bob first started, he got given a single username and password. And that's all Bob needed. It was great. Easy for him to remember, and easy for the IT department when he changed roles. They just had to update his information in one place. Now, Bob's company purchased a few other organizations over the years, and Bob ended up with a number of usernames and passwords. They all had to be changed at different times and had different complexity. And the IT department found this quite costly because they had to, whenever Bob changed roles, they had to go to each of these different systems and update Bob's information. Along came Windows 2000 and Active Directory. So Bob's company installed Windows 2000 and went to Active Directory. Bob thought this was great because over the space of a couple of months, he went back to having a single username and password. Active Directory took away all of that complexity, allowed him to access those applications. IT department thought this was great too. Single Bob, all we had to do was update one Bob in Active Directory, everything flowed through. So let's fast forward 12 years, 13 years. Bob now works in marketing, and they use cloud-based applications, software as a service-based applications. Great, Bob loves them. They're fantastic, really functional. But with each new cloud-based application that Bob gets, he gets another username and another password that he's got to remember. He's going back to kind of the bad old days of having lots of usernames and lots of passwords. In the IT department, they've got all these identities that they've got to manage out on the internet with these cloud providers. Now, they could install Active Directory Federation services, and I'll explain what that is in a second. I'll actually explain it now. Active Directory Federation services, for those of you that don't know, allows applications outside your network to validate authentication information with your local AD. Essentially, it allows Bob to have that single username and password that he wants for all those applications. But it only solves half of the problem. I've still got three Bob identities out there on the internet that my IT department has to manage and maintain and keep up to date. So as we move to consuming more cloud-based applications, the number of identities that our staff are gathering is increasing. And that increases our administrative costs, and it increases the complexity in our network and troubleshooting. We need an identity management system for the cloud, just like we have on our on-premise network with Active Directory. And this is where Azure Active Directory comes into play. So what is Azure Active Directory? Well, let's start with what it isn't. It's not your local Active Directory running in Azure. It's not an Azure VM with Active Directory domain services installed upon it with some special multi-tenant flag set. Okay, your local Active Directory is designed to authenticate staff against devices and against complex multi-tiered applications. To do that, it uses protocols like Kerberos and NTLM. Now, Azure Active Directory is designed to authenticate staff against cloud-based applications, Office 365, Twitter, AirWatch, GoToMeeting. To do that, uses a completely different set of protocols. I'm not going to go into it in a 200-level session, but they're very different. But we do have some commonalities, too. They both hold identity information. They both hold Bob's identity. And we can manage them with PowerShell. So if we've got provisioning systems within our local Active Directory that use PowerShell with some minor modifications, we can perform those same functions against Azure. So back to that question that we asked, what is Azure Active Directory? It's an identity management solution for cloud-based applications. And we can synchronize it with our local Active Directory. Right, let's jump in and have a little bit look, more of a look at Azure Active Directory. So the first thing we need to know is we have these tiers. We have a free tier, which is what you get with your Azure subscription. And we have a premium tier, additional functionality that we get. Let's have a look at Azure Active Directory free. So the first thing that we get is we can have up to 500,000 objects in our Active Directory. It's quite a bit, really. I think most New Zealand organizations would probably fit into that. Just a note, though, it does start at 150,000 objects, and we need to put a call in with Microsoft to increase that limit. As you'd expect, we get user and groups. We can create users, we can create groups within Azure Active Directory. Now, we can associate up to 10 single sign-on applications per staff member. So remember, this is the key thing for Azure Active Directory. It's about bringing our cloud applications and managing the identities that's going into those cloud applications. So with the free version, we hit a limit of 10. Now, there are lots of different ways to integrate our cloud applications, and I'm going to take you through a demo and show you some of those. But by far the easiest way is Microsoft's created a catalog of cloud applications that they've kind of done all the heavy lifting for you, and they've got some wizards that they've created. So when I took this screenshot a couple of days ago, there were 2,390 applications in the catalog already. So quite a few, really. Now, with Azure Active Directory free, we can only assign applications to users. It's not a big issue. It's just something to be aware of. We can create groups, but we can't assign applications to groups. Reporting. How many people get reports out of their local Active Directory for, say, like, failed logon attempts? A few. How many people would like to get reports about failed logon attempts? No one? One person. So our basic security reports, we get sign-ins from unknown sources, sign-ins after multiple failures. Is someone failing to be able to log in, and then they manage to? And sign-ins from multiple geographies. Daniel signed in from Auckland, and then 2 minutes later, he signed in from Singapore. I couldn't get to Singapore in that time. Did I outsource my job to someone else? Are they doing my job now? So we get some interesting information there. Obviously, we get the ability to synchronize with our local Active Directory. Pretty key, and I'm going to take you through that a bit later on. So, what's different with Azure Active Directory Premium? How does this all sort of change? The first thing we get is we get an unlimited number of objects within our directory. So we're not stuck at 500,000. We still start at 150,000. We still have to put the support call in to increase it. but we can increase it as much as we want. We get an unlimited number of single sign-on applications per user. So again, as many as you want. The next bit I think is pretty key. We can assign those applications to users or groups. So we can create a group, we can assign an application to that group, and we can assign users to that group. Hey gosh, that feels like what we do currently, right, in our local Active Directory. Okay, it's the same. We also get self-service group management. And this is really cool. We can delegate to one of our ordinary staff the ability to manage the users which are in that group. So let's say we've got our accounting group with all of our accounting single sign-on applications. We can say, Mr. CFO, why don't you be responsible for who's allowed to be in that group and who's allowed to access your accounting applications? We can make them responsible for it. And within the access panel, which I'll show you in one of the demos, you can see how easy it is with the workflows for that to all work. We get advanced usage reports and security reports. So who here monitors how many staff are using an application? Application usage monitoring. Couple of people, right? So with a premium, you can see each of your cloud applications, who's using it, when they're using it, and who's not using it. So you can potentially retract that license and reuse it somewhere else, save yourself some money. We also get some additional security reports, sign-ins from IP addresses with suspicious activity, and irregular sign-in activity, some of the more advanced reporting from Microsoft. We also get some additional functionality as well. Multi-factor authentication. And if everything works for me, I'm going to try and show you that in my demo. I am risking it with an iPhone on the stage at a Microsoft conference, I do realize. But with multi-factor authentication, we can also download a local version and run that within our local directory. So we can provide multi-factor authentication to our local software as well as our cloud-based software. And this is pretty cool. They've kind of really thought about it because applications like Outlook, running Outlook Anywhere, don't support multi-factor authentication. So you kind of go, well, that sucks, doesn't it? But we can create bypass passwords. They call them application passwords. Nice big complex passwords that staff won't ordinarily remember. And that comes through, multi-factor authentication will be bypassed for that logon. So we can still have Outlook running, we can still have Outlook Anywhere, and we can have multi-factor authentication when they go to access, say, OWA, for instance. So I think that's pretty cool. We can also whitelist IP addresses too. What else do we get? We get a password reset portal. This is a really interesting one. I asked a couple of people yesterday, how many people expose a password reset portal to the internet? Yeah, a couple of people, right? How many people would like to, but that sounds kind of really scary, right? A few. With the multi-factor authentication, the risk of that password reset portal becomes less, and I'll show you how we can define the types of connectivity that staff need to, the types of contact we have to have with staff before we can allow that to happen. We get to brand the login pages. Sounds really minor, but for some organizations, they don't want it to be a kind of big Microsoft fest. They want their own branding up on the pages when staff log in. So with Premium, we can do that. We also get Forefront Identity Manager user and server cals. Does everybody know what Forefront Identity Manager is? A couple of people, right? So Forefront Identity Manager, it's kind of like the big daddy of Microsoft's identity management software. And it provides identity management for your staff, password self-service, and automated lifecycle management across different systems. So if you've got, say, a student records system, Forefront Identity Manager can synchronize that information with Active Directory. For larger organizations, it's a pretty key tool. Probably most importantly with Azure AD Premium, you get an SLA, quite key for many organizations, 99.9%. And to date, Microsoft have met that SLA. There are two other features I haven't put on the slide deck, and they're currently in preview. Both of them are pretty cool. So application proxy, where we can take a web-based application that we've currently got inside our network, and we can publish that up to our access portal. And we can make it available on the internet securely to our staff. I think that's really cool. Things like SharePoint or OWA, and you can provide multi-factor authentication to that. And we've also got device registration. Now, this is an interesting one. Azure Active Directory doesn't really care about devices. You don't have computer accounts. You don't join computers to Azure Active Directory. But we've got this workplace join, and we can make authentication decisions based on whether you're accessing an application from a device that we trust, that we know about already on there. So it's quite different than our local Active Directory. So compared to Azure AD Free, I guess the takeaway from this is Azure Active Directory Premium is pretty feature rich. But enough of me telling you about features. Let's jump into a demo and actually have a look at this. And I was talking to one of the Azure Active Directory PMs over in the States last week. He gave me a couple of interesting facts. Azure AD currently manages identity data for over 4 million organizations around the world. So quite a few people are using it. Let's just get this unlocked. Hey, it worked. That's a good start. Okay, so the first thing I thought we'd do is see what the user experience is like when one of our staff members logs into their access panel to access their applications. So let's log in as Bob. Now, the first thing that's happened is the screen's rebranded itself. Okay, it's picked up the bobias.co.nz, and it's pulled up the branding that I've stolen from the TechEd site. Let's enter in our password and click on sign in. Right, now I've got multi-factor authentication turned on, so demo gods be willing, I'm going to get a phone call in a minute, which is going to ask me to, here we go, and I'll put this on speaker. So we'll push hash. And everything going well, here we go. We'll get signed in. Now you might have noticed there, I had the option to trust this device for 7 days. That's a configuration setting that I've got. Now there's a whole lot of other options for multi-factor, but it's really hard to see a screen from up here, so I thought the phone call was probably the easiest way to show that. So that's, we've gone in and we're being presented with the applications that I've made available to Bob. So let's see what happens if Bob clicks on zero. So this is going to redirect me to the Xero website and log me in, okay? Now I have to note, I've not got single sign-on enabled for Xero. I'm using a feature of Active Directory where it caches the password. And as an administrator, I can set that, or I can say the staff member can set that and it will record it, it will store it for me on there. And this is an integration Microsoft's done, not Xero. So we go back to our access panel. And Bob's also a owner of a group. So if we go to approvals, we can see here that Jeannie Rose has requested access to the TechEd demo group. Bob can click on the tick and approve that access if he wants on there. So really easy for Bob to manage who should be in the requests to access groups. If we go across to our profile, and you'll notice this screen is all basically designed for touch devices as well. Everything's nice and big and simple, it's not overly complicated. We can see Bob's information. Bob can see his information, change his password. Bob's registered for password reset. We can see the big tick there. But say Bob gets a bit sick of these phone calls coming through every time he wants to log in. Now, by the way, I've enforced logins for Bob because he's in sales and travels a lot. Travels a lot, not the fact he's in sales. And he can come in and change this. So at the moment, our preferred logon is Call My Mobile Phone. We can click on the drop down there. You can all see that? Yep. And we might say text my mobile phone or notify me through the app. Now, just to show you how easy it is for staff to set up the mobile app, if we click on configure, everything willing, when you install the app on your phone, you can just scan the Q code on the screen and it automatically configures the application for you. You don't have to type in a whole lot of numbers and digits and get everything right. And I talked about the app passwords. So Bob can come in and he can create specific passwords for things like Outlook, which will bypass the multi-factor authentication if need be. Right, so that's the access panel. That's our user experience. It's pretty seamless, really. It's pretty easy. Let's log out as Bob. And let's log into our management interface. Right. Are we all pretty familiar with the Azure management interface by now? Have we seen it in a few demos? Yep. So some of you will note that I'm using the older interface, not the new management interface that some speakers will have shown you. That's because not all of the Active Directory functionality has been moved into the new management interface yet on there. So if we scroll down the side here, all the way down, we'll see Active Directory. Now, the first thing we see here is we've got two directories, okay? We've got the default directory that got created when my Azure tenant got set up, and we've got the directory which I created for this demo, the bobias.co.nz. So let's jump in. First thing we see is our users. And one of the most important things on this screen is if we look at sourced from, we can see that we've got some staff which have come from Windows Azure Active Directory, and we've got other staff which have come from our local Active Directory. Okay, I've synchronized their accounts into my Azure Active Directory. So let's keep picking on Bob. Let's click on Bob. Okay, the first thing we note, Bob's grayed out. Okay, we can only edit the details of accounts in the system that mastered that information. So because Bob came from our local Active Directory, we need to update his information in our local Active Directory, okay? If we go to Azure Test 1, I can update Azure Test 1 because Azure Test 1 was created within Azure AD. Let's go back to Bob. There are some things which are not stored in Active Directory, our local Active Directory, and so we can modify those. We can decide the role that Bob's going to have within Azure AD. We want to make him a password administrator or a user administrator. We can see the alternate email address that he could set up as part of multi-factor authentication. And most importantly, we can block Bob from logging in, okay? If we don't want Bob to log in, he's lost his cell phone, he thinks he might be compromised, we can block his account. If we go across to devices, I think this is pretty cool, this bit.
When you block from Windows Azure.
Yep. That's right. Yep. Just Azure. Yep. We can see the clients that Bob's logged in from. So we can see that Bob logged in today from a Windows 8 device, and he logged in from a Mac on Firefox. Worked just as well. Groups are the same. So groups that we've created within Azure Active Directory, we can update the information on. Groups which have been synchronized from our local Active Directory, we can't update within Azure. We need to do that from our local Active Directory. Once you kind of get that, it sort of makes sense. So that's our users, that's our groups, that's pretty simple, really. Applications, right? This is kind of the big area. This is where we pull it all together. So let's go and add an application. So we get a couple of options here. We can add an application that we're developing within Azure. It's going to be private to our business. We can publish an application from our network to outside our network to our staff. And we can add an application from the gallery. So let's go and add an application from the gallery. So let's choose Dropbox for Business. It's nice and simple. Click on Add. So three easy steps. We configure single sign-on, we configure user provisioning, and then we assign our staff. Okay? The user provisioning is really key because that allows Azure, when a new staff member gets added to a group, to go out and provision that staff member in the service. Okay? Configuring single sign-on, now, obviously, what we'd really like to do for every application is to have a Windows Azure single sign-on. Not all applications support that yet, so we do have the option which I showed in the demo, which was password-based single sign-on, where we can put the password, username and password in, or we can have the staff member prompted when they click on the icon to enter their username and password at that point. Oops. Let's go and have a look at our App Zero. So we can see here trends, who's logged in, and if we go across to our users and all users, we can see that Bob has access and Kate has access to this application. So it's really easy to set these applications up, and Microsoft have instructions for all of the cloud-based apps that they've already built those wizards for, which makes it far easier. Oops. So under domains, when you first create your Azure Active Directory, you get this onmicrosoft.com domain. So in this case, bobias.onmicrosoft.com. And if we were to synchronize our staff, well, when we create staff with just that, they'd have to log in as, you know, jane@bobias.onmicrosoft.com. It's not really kind of the user experience that we're wanting staff to have. So what we need to do is we need to add the domain that we want staff to be logging into, the @bobias.co.nz. Now that domain needs to be a registered DNS domain. So how many people have an Active Directory named something .local? All right, we've got a few. Awesome. So up until a couple of weeks ago, .local wasn't a permissible DNS name out on the internet. Now that's changed. You can actually register a .local domain now, but Microsoft would prefer you to make sure to have your external domain name here, and I'm going to take you through in a later section updating the user principal names so that everything matches. Essentially, really what we want staff to be logging in with is their email address. So we want your email address domain sitting here. And once we've verified it, once we've gone and put in the DNS records that Microsoft wants to prove that you own that, you can make that your primary domain. And we have to do that before we can go and do our directory integration, our dir sync. Now we see here it's pretty simple actually. There's not a whole lot we do within the Azure Management Console to synchronize. We need to download the dir sync tool, which I'll show you, and it all gets set up from there. But what we can do is we can deactivate that synchronization if we want. Under our configuration, this is where we configure the options that we want available to our staff. So we can do our branding. We can choose whether we want people to access, to be able to reset their passwords or not. How many authentication methods do we need before we're happy for them to reset their password? And which of these are we happy for them to have? Maybe we're not happy with them having an alternate email address. We can control whether they get prompted to register these details straight away. We can even forward them to a special website to register their details. The multi-factor authentication that I showed you before. Okay? We can choose whether we want those app password functionality. We can turn that off if we think that's too risky. We can put in the IP addresses that we want to whitelist, that we don't want multi-factor authentication to trigger for. Good example is you don't want staff coming into your office and then getting multi-factor authentication to access their cloud-based apps. So you'd probably put the external IP addresses that your staff are coming from when they're in the office under the whitelist. Maybe the CEO as well, his home address or something like that. And we can decide whether we want to trust devices or not, whether we want staff to be able to say, trust this device for 7 days or 60 days. On there. Going down a bit further, group management. Do we want to be able to delegate groups to staff to manage? Do we want staff to be able to create groups themselves? I've turned that off within my tenant, but we might want staff to be able to create their own groups and have their own group management. I don't know. It's a bit scary as far as I'm concerned, but for some places. And our application proxy. So reporting. Let's go to application usage. So as I said, we can see who's using our cloud-based apps, and how many times they're using that app, and we can drill in, and we can see here that Bob's been using Xero on there. If we go back one, we also get our information like sign-ins after multiple failures. So we can see that Bob had a real struggle there, 20 login attempts before he managed to log in. If anybody's interested, I'll tell you afterwards what I got wrong in my demo the first time. Now, the most important one, which I've left to the last, is licenses. Okay? Azure Active Directory Premium is licensed on a per-user basis. So unless you give your staff a license and allocate your staff a license, they won't be able to use the premium features. So you can do this via the GUI. There's also PowerShell commands that you can run as well to assign these licenses. So it's really key. You do everything, forget to assign a license, and can't quite figure out why I can't access the password reset portal on there. All right, so that's a bit of a walkthrough of the management console and what sort of the user interface looks like and that experience. Let's jump back into the slide deck for a bit. Come and see me afterwards, because it's a bit more than a 30-second answer. Right. So we've seen how we can get rid of these three different cloud-based Bob identities and synchronize them down to one. So now we have a Bob identity for our on-premise, and we have a Bob identity for the cloud. We've got a Bob each way, right? But we only want one. How do we get to one? I don't want just two. So we need to talk about integration. How can we synchronize, how can we integrate Azure Active Directory with our local Active Directory? So Microsoft released a tool called DirSync. It's a very simple, almost appliance-based piece of software that we can use to synchronize our identity information from our local Active Directory up to Azure. Now, it's just our user information and our contact information that gets synchronized. There's also another tool which is in preview release 2 at the moment, which is called Azure AD Sync. And that has some additional features if you've got multiple forests, which is something which DirSync can't do. But that's just our identity information. What about our passwords? How can we get our passwords synchronized? So DirSync, we can turn on password synchronization. And what that does is it takes the password that we've got in our local Active Directory, takes the hash of that password, takes a hash of the hash of that password, and it sends that across to Azure, and it stores that hash within Azure. So when you initially turn it on, it's just one way. Whatever the password hash was in your local Active Directory comes across to Azure. We call this same sign-on, okay? So when staff go to access their My Apps, they're still going to be prompted to log in, but they're going to enter the same username and password they do when they're local on there. The reason it's the same sign-on is because Azure Active Directory, with this situation, doesn't have any ability to come back to our local AD and say, is this password correct? Okay? Just before we get to that point, we also have the ability to do what we call write back. Okay? Now, write back's really important with our password reset portal. There's no point just synchronizing our passwords up to Azure and then having this password reset portal that changes the password only within Azure. So it's a PowerShell command to enable write back, which means when we change our password within Azure, it writes it back to our local Active Directory. If we want to get single sign-on, we need to inject Active Directory Federation services into the piece. Okay? We need to have Active Directory Federation services there so that Azure Active Directory can talk to our local Active Directory and say, hey, is this security token still valid? And our local Active Directory will go, yep, sweet as. Now, with this in place, when staff access My Apps, they're not going to get prompted for a username and password. They'll be seamlessly logged in because they've already got that security token. Now, why do I still have DirSync running there and Password Sync? Okay? I still need my identity information within Azure for this to happen. I don't necessarily need to have my Password Sync, but if I want to use the Password Reset portal, which will pop up on the screen, I need to have my password synchronization running as well. So staff would go to my password reset portal, they'd reset their password, it gets synchronized back to my local Active Directory, they go to log into My Apps, Azure connects to my local Active Directory and says, this is correct, and it goes, yep, sweet as, you beaut, you're all good to go on there. So a couple of moving parts, but once you've got it in place, it works really well. Now, for those of you which have Forefront Identity Manager already, you can use Forefront Identity Manager to do this. Password synchronization with the current version of Forefront Identity Manager is not quite there yet. That's being released in a couple of weeks. But you do get all of the multi-forest synchronization, which Forefront's really good at. So let's jump in and do have a look at monitoring DirSync and just sort of look under the covers within DirSync on there. And I've got another little interesting fact for you. There are more than 500 million objects stored in Azure Active Directory. It's quite a few, I reckon. Let's just get this up. Push the right button. Right. So I've got two domain controllers running in Azure, and I've got a DirSync server, which I'm synchronizing with my Azure Active Directory. So when you install DirSync, you go through the wizard, it sets it up, but then everything kind of disappears. There's no kind of application there that you can go in and really look to see what's going on. It's been designed to be sort of the set and forget, runs in the background, it's just a service. That's kind of cool, but I like to see what's going on and understand what's happening. So we get event logs. You know, they're kind of cool, I guess. Lots of information, a bit hard to read on there. But to get a sort of a single snapshot view of just kind of where things are at, there's a nice little PowerShell command that I found called get MSOL, Microsoft Online, company information. So let's click on that to refresh it. What that's doing is that's connecting up to my Azure AD tenant, and it's saying, hey, tell me a bit of information about this tenant. The handy thing it gives me is, when did I last DirSync? And when did I last do a password sync on there? So I get the actual time. Now, normally, dir sync synchronizes every 3 hours. For this demo, I've monkeyed about and it's synchronizing every 15 minutes. I wouldn't recommend that in a production environment. But we can force a synchronization whenever we want with this start online coexistence sync. So if you've got provisioning processes where you're creating an account in your local Active Directory and you want that account to be in Azure AD within the next half hour, you can add this PowerShell command to your provisioning process to cause the synchronization to occur pretty much instantaneously. And I can also see in my tenant that I've got password synchronization enabled and the self-service password reset enabled on there. But wait, there's more. So buried, and when I mean buried, under program files, Windows Azure Active Directory Sync, don't worry, I put this on my blog, Sync Bus Sync Services UI Shell, Microsoft really didn't want us to find it, is this client called MIIS Client. If we double click on this, first thing you notice it says Forefront Identity Manager. Hold up, didn't we install dirsync? Okay, so dirsync is based on Forefront Identity Manager. It's kind of a cut down version. The thing I like about this little client is I get some stats out of it. Now, I've not made a whole lot of changes this morning, but if I had, I could see actually the number of updates that I'd gone through, what was going on. And I can also see, if I click on the right one, the domain controller that I've connected to. Right? Am I having problems? Is it my DC? The other thing I really like is under the Metaverse search, if we click on search, I can see the objects which are being synchronized. I'm a bit of a control freak, right? I want to see what's going on, right? So if I go and click on Bob, so I can see the actual attributes that I'm synchronizing between my local AD and between my Azure Active Directory on there. Now, I've not filled in all of the information on this user, but if I had, I'd see more records there. And I can see when they were last modified on there. So I get a bit more information, which I quite like. Yes, it does on there. Right, let's leave that and jump back to our slide deck. Right, so we've seen now how we can go from having a Bob each way to one Bob identity in our local Active Directory and in our cloud. One Bob identity to update and to manage, right? And it's not that complicated to do on there. So what are some things that we can do to prepare our local Active Directory to make the synchronization as seamless and pain-free as possible? So my first slide is all about having a cleanup. Disable accounts that are no longer in use. There's no point assigning a license to an account that no one's going to log into. Move your disabled accounts to a separate OU. Get them out somewhere so you know where they are. Update your AD account information with mobile numbers and office phone numbers. How many people put this information in Active Directory? Well, that's actually more than I thought. This is all of the information that Microsoft recommends you update against user accounts. Okay? A lot of this is used by Office 365 to generate its global address list and for searching, but other cloud-based applications as part of the provisioning also get that information as well on there. And my last point under cleanup is once you've done all this work and you've got all this information there, put in place a process to keep it up to date. There's no point, a huge amount of effort, then it going out of date again. So think about how you're going to let staff keep that information up to date, or whether they're going to have it on your intranet and you're going to synchronize it somehow, or even just your standard Mac process, but reinforce that you really want to keep that information up to date. Right. User principal names. Does everybody know what a user principal name is? I've got a few people hands up. It's that field that we all skip over when we're creating users, right? It's the login name that people can use, which looks like an email address. Okay, it's their name at, and then something else. In this case, bobuyers.co.nz. Okay, how many people here have staff that just log in with their SAM account name, which is the next one down, bob.marley? Yep. Do many of you have staff logging in with their email address? Couple of people, right? When you create staff, and if you haven't set the UPN up, Windows will always set the UPN to be your local domain name. Now, if you're like the gentleman over here with a .local at the end, your UPNs aren't going to match the domain that you've set up within Azure. So what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to update those UPNs so that they match. At a minimum, you need to go from having mydomain.local to something like mydomain.co.nz. But my preference is to make it look like your email address, firstname.lastname at mydomain.co.nz on there. Now, if your staff aren't logging in using a UPN, then there are actually scripts that you can run that will update that information in the background. Those of you who have staff logging in with a UPN, you've probably done this already, and they're probably using a domain name which is registered on the internet on there. So it's pretty easy to do. Right, my last one is to run IDFix. Now, IDFix is a tool that Microsoft's written, and it checks your local AD user account attributes for characters that are invalid in Azure AD. Well, hold up. Wouldn't they be the same as what I've got in my local AD? Well, turns out no. Turns out that there are some differences in what you can have stored in your local AD versus what Azure AD will allow. And it's certain characters. It's spaces in certain fields. The next one I really like, it's the use of a dot at the start or at the end of specific fields. So IDFix is a little tool that Microsoft's written, I'm going to show you it in a second, which goes through and checks all of your user attributes to see if there are any fields which are going to cause your synchronization to fail. One of the things I quite like about the tool is you can export the information and import the information. So you can run it, do your query, export it out to a CSV file, go away and get someone to update it, fix it, or re-import it, and then apply those changes on there. And it has a complete log of the changes that you've made as well, which is pretty good. So let's have a really quick demo and just see how that runs. My last little fact, and I think this is the best one, on Azure Active Directory's busiest day so far, authentication requests peaked at 60,000 requests per second. 60,000 requests per second. I reckon my Active Directory might see 10 requests per second, maybe, on a really bad day with just one domain controller running. So I was quite blown away by that. 60,000 requests is huge. Right. So up on the screen here, I have IDFix. Now, if we do a quick query, we're going to see that I have no errors in my directory at the moment. Bonus. And I've queried 62 records. So let's go into Active Directory users and computers. Look, I should be using ADAC, I know, but I'm old school and I like Active Directory users and computers. And let's go to my aptly named bad one user. And let's update the user principal name. Stick a dot at the end. Told you this is a pretty simple demo, this one. Okay, perfectly legit within our local Active Directory. Right, here we go. So, we have a problem. Synchronization's going to fail because our user principal name has an issue. There's the value. Now, within the tool, I'm not going to do an export just for one record. I can actually make an update straight within here. So I can say, right, well, I need to remove the dot. Now, I can choose to remove that attribute. I don't really want to do that. I want to edit the attribute. So I click on Edit, and I click Apply. Now, get a little disclaimer. This kind of says all care, no responsibility. You deleted it, you owned it. So we'll click OK on that. And it takes a second for my two domain controllers to synchronize, but if we go back now, so much faster than the hotel, by the way, and go to our attribute editor, he says that, and then we get a dropout. That would be quite good, wouldn't it? And it hasn't quite updated yet. Let's just go back in. There we go. See, the dot's been removed from our user principal name. If we go into a query now, we'll see that we've cleared that error on there. So really, Microsoft kind of pitch ID fix is something that you run once, but I think if your provisioning processes aren't kind of really tight, you're probably going to want to run ID fix if you see synchronization errors, because it probably means that someone's done something they shouldn't have done on there. Right, let's chop back into the last bit of the slide deck. I'm really aware that it's lunch next, so we're pull it in a little bit early, and then people can get in the queue for lunch. All right. So, look, we had a look at Active Directory, Azure Active Directory. We've looked at some of the features. We've looked at the differences between the tiers. There is a third tier that I've heard is coming, which is a basic tier, which will sit somewhere between free and premium in terms of the features that we have. We've looked at the options we've got for synchronizing, and it's really up to the organization as to how much or how little you want to synchronize. You might just want identity information and no passwords. Really, you need to decide as an organization how much you want to synchronize with Azure AD. And we've talked about a couple of practical things that we can do to our local Active Directory to make that synchronization experience as seamless as possible on there. And now look, like I said at the beginning of this session, I hope that I've inspired you all to start your Azure AD trial today on there. Hey, look, thank you so much for coming to my session. There's a couple of other sessions you might be interested in. Office 365 Directory Synchronization and Federation Options tomorrow, and Azure Remote App, which looks really fantastic. Hey, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming.